Hello and welcome to WaveScan, the international DX program from Adventist World Radio. Researched and written in Indianapolis by Dr. Adrian Peterson and in Los Angeles by Ray Robinson, and produced in the studios of WRMI Shortwave in Okeechobee, Florida. I'm Jeff White. This is edition NWS 808 for release on Sunday, August 18th, 2024. On WaveScan today, the Soviet invasion of Czechoslovakia. We'll continue our report about the 2024 NASB annual meeting in Canada, and we'll have our Bangladesh DX report. This week sees the 56th anniversary of the Soviet-led Warsaw Pact invasion of Czechoslovakia, which started on August 20th, 1968. As tanks rolled into Prague, concerning changes were noted in the radio broadcasts from that country. And among other places, these were carefully monitored by a small outpost of YLE radio in Finland. Here's Ray Robinson in Los Angeles to tell us more.
Thanks, Jeff. There are painful memories to this day in the Czech Republic of the occasion in August 1968 when Soviet Premier Alexei Kosygin put an end to what was commonly known as the Prague Spring, a period of political liberalisation and democratic reforms that had been instituted by the Czech President Alexander Dubček. The reforms had begun in the January of that year and included such things as freedom of speech, freedom of the press for Czech newspapers, radio and TV, freedom of worship and freedom of travel. At the height of the Cold War, these reforms were not well received in Moscow, and the result was that a Warsaw Pact force of over 650,000 troops, more than half a million, accompanied by 4,600 tanks, were sent from Russia, Poland, Hungary and Bulgaria to occupy the country, equipped with the most sophisticated weapons in the Soviet military catalogue at that time. Back in 2020, an article was published on Finnish Radio YLE's website titled "What Connects the Finnish YLE Station and Prague?" The article was written in Finnish and the English translation from Google was a bit stilted and awkward, so I've paraphrased it so we can now bring you the gist of the story. And I apologise in advance if I butcher some of the names in Finnish. It involves YLE's measuring station in a quiet wooded area of Laajasalo Island, Helsinki. In the same way that Staten Island is a part of New York City, so Laajasalo Island forms part of eastern Helsinki. The measuring station there was essentially a wooden house with sophisticated radio receivers and antennas whose primary function was to measure the frequency of all Finnish broadcasting stations and to alert any that might be drifting even slightly from their assigned channels. It was staffed by a team of experienced radio technicians, most of whom were also shortwave and mediumwave DXers, who, once their main responsibilities had been discharged, delighted in being able to use the equipment for other side interests. The article states that when Soviet tanks crossed the Czechoslovakian border a little after midnight on the morning of Wednesday, August 21st, 1968, in a small wooden building in eastern Helsinki, the handsets were monitored with attentive ears. The Laajasalo measuring station was on standby because something strange had been detected in the airwaves. The previous day, there had been signs of unusual transmitter activity and preliminary test transmissions. Especially in Czechoslovakia's neighbour, Ukraine, it seemed that something was going on. As events progressed on that Wednesday, no Czech shortwave transmitters could be heard. Further, it was observed that all Voice of America, BBC and Deutsche Welle programming in Czech was being jammed. And then the occupiers' radio station, Radio Vltava, appeared on medium wave. So, in Laajasalo, they listened to the radio war. The occupation of Czechoslovakia was a major news story around the world, but it was a challenge to obtain reliable information about what was actually going on inside the country. Journalist Lejko Zakovilova reported for YLE from Prague. His struggle to get a telephone report out to the editorial office in Finland has gone down in the history of journalism. The problem for all foreign correspondents working in Czechoslovakia was that international telephone calls were monitored and sometimes deliberately cut. For example, Zakovalova's first report had to be relayed to Finland via a Swiss call centre, and it didn't make it into the news until day two of the occupation. At Wireli Radio's measuring station in Lajasalo, though, monitoring of Czechoslovakian airwaves worked flawlessly. Jarmo Sivusari, the head of the station at the time, recalls that they had the best equipment available, but listening to broadcasts inside occupied Czechoslovakia required not only good equipment, but also amateur radio skills. Broadcasts could be heard well when you knew how to dig them out of the howl of the ether, says Jarmo Leho, Wireli's former technology director who studied the history of the Lajasalo measuring station. According to Leho, a classic disinformation operation was underway. The occupiers tried their best to prevent Czechoslovak transmissions by destroying or jamming the transmitters. The central radio studios in Prague were taken over in just a few hours. And at the same time, the occupiers broadcast their own program, which they tried to disguise as originating locally by broadcasting it on a familiar domestic Czech wavelength. Lajasalo, however, noticed that the broadcast came from Ukraine. The Czechoslovaks, on the other hand, established so-called free radio stations whose transmission frequency and location constantly changed, so that the occupiers were not immediately able to silence them. The resistance via radio surprised the occupiers, Leho says. For example, on August the 25th, 4 days after the invasion, almost 20 free stations were monitored in Lajasalo. The jamming of free radio stations intensified on August the 27th. Vaino Leitoranta, who worked at the measuring station, guessed that a train carrying jamming transmitters had arrived, enabling the occupiers not only to jam foreign shortwave broadcasts in Czech, but also to jam local medium-wave stations as well. The last free radio station went silent 2 days later. During the 8-day radio war, the Lajasalo measuring station listened to what the people of Czechoslovakia and the country's reformist leader, Alexander Dubček, had to say. The messages also interested the Czechoslovak embassy in Finland, and indeed the president of Finland too. To try to save face, the Soviets said they'd been invited into Czechoslovakia by the Czechoslovak Communist Party. However, that was a lie, and no such invitation had ever been issued. In Finland, that lie was repeated by Soviet ambassador Andrei Kovalev, but the Czechoslovak ambassador to Finland, Zdeněk Urban, apparently visited the Lajasalo measuring station for himself to hear what was going on in his home country, and he used the information he heard there to refute the Russian claims of the invitation. Jarmo Sivusari, who worked at the measuring station, remembers the ambassador's visit. He was at the station at least once and listened to the broadcast for several hours, he said. Vaino Leitoranta, the station's late employee, also wrote about the ambassador's visit. According to Leitoranta, Urban's assistant brought beer as a thank you. It quickly became clear to Urban that Czechoslovakia had not asked for Soviet help. Soon President Kekkonen of Finland also knew about it. So why decide to publish an article about all this some 52 years later in 2020? Well, this was all brought back to light when a historical document was discovered in the archives of Wireli Radio. Jarmo Leho found the document, a travel report, which describes a visit to Czechoslovak National Radio 3 months after the occupation. The beginning of the 9-page report, titled Notes from the Trip to Pilsen, 27th of November to 5th of December 1968, is a normal technical text. But then the content changes. The author relates in detail how the occupiers tried to silence the domestic radio stations and how the Czechoslovakians harassed them. The travellers apparently met with 3 Czech sources who are identified in the report solely by their initials, Mr. Z, Mr. M, and Mr. P, apparently all Czechoslovak radio staff. They took the Finnish visitors to hidden studios and to a radio station with the lights turned off but with the transmitters working at full power. Road signs had been removed everywhere to make things difficult for the Soviet troops. The report describes how the technicians of the Krasov radio station were marched ominously to the side of an open cable trench and made to stand there. They thought they were going to be shot, but fortunately that particular situation was resolved through negotiation. Pilsen Radio continued to broadcast messages from the legitimate government, i.e. Dubček's reformists. According to the report, Czechoslovakia's regional radio stations had been allowed to continue to operate, to that point at least, from normal legal studio facilities using legal transmitters. The travel report tells how the occupying troops were surprised by the impassioned resistance by the ordinary people of Czechoslovakia and were confused by how reluctant the Czechoslovakian authorities were to cooperate. According to the report, broadcasting had a central position in leading passive resistance. Because the first communications coming through the radio came from people who enjoyed the people's trust, the people took the radio as their common leader, Mr. M tells his Finnish colleague. And there the article on the Finnish website ends, but it's a stark reminder in these days of reliance on web streaming that in times of trouble, when phone lines can be cut and internet access blocked, radio can still be a very resilient tool with a potent voice that cannot easily be snuffed out. As for Alexander Dubček, he was reassigned in 1969 to a lowly position in the Czech Forestry Commission. The Czechs would have to wait another 20 years until real liberation came in the form of the Velvet Revolution in November 1989. Back to you, Jeff.
Thanks, Ray, for that fascinating story. Next week, we'll be starting a two-week series about the early American Forces Radio Service, AFRS, stations that were set up on various islands in the Pacific towards the end of World War II in the mid-1940s. Last week, we played the first part of a chat that Ray and I had at the 2024 annual meeting of the National Association of Shortwave Broadcasters, which took place a few weeks ago at the Galcom Radio Factory in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada. Today, let's continue with that recording. Galcom has hosted this meeting of the National Association of Shortwave Broadcasters. Galcom hosted the NASB annual meeting 14 years ago. This year, it's hosting again, and they have a new meeting room, which is very nice downstairs, right?
Oh, yes. I was surprised when we came in the door that they had such a nice... In fact, it's not the only meeting room they've got here. They've got another one as well. But Galcom, the name originally was Galilee Communications. It started in Tiberias in... on the shores of the Sea of Galilee in Israel. That's where they started putting these radios together before it moved to the States. Mm. As I said, work with Voice of Hope. We have the Voice of Hope station on the southern shore of the Sea of Galilee, Voice of Hope Middle East. And from our studio windows there, we can see Tiberias a little further around the shoreline where the Galcom started. So it's interesting to have that association with the company here now.
Yeah, it's you gave an interesting presentation about all of the Voice of Hope stations, including the Middle East station, with that beautiful view out of the window there, and the Sea of Galilee, of course, very, very historic, very biblical, right?
Oh yeah. When I visited there, of course, you do the tourist thing as well, and you go around and see the different places. But, you know, every few miles, there's a site that has some biblical significance. It's really interesting to see it.
Yeah. And you had one shot of, then you've got a transmitter site that's north of there, right, near the Lebanese border?
Right. It's the studios that are down on the Sea of Galilee. The transmitter site with the 50,000-watt AM transmitter is up in a place called Shia Yeshuv, and that's just 1 mile from the Lebanese border. Right now, we're recording this in July 2024, and right now the Department of Communications in Israel took the transmitter over in February this year to use for rebroadcasting the Israeli Army radio network, because with the current hostilities, they had to deploy additional IDF forces all along the northern border, and the few FMs they had up there carrying army radio were not sufficient to reach all the locations where the forces were, so they wanted to take over the 1287 AM transmitter, and that has full coverage all along the border there, plus it penetrates places where the lower powered FMs can't. So that's what's being carried at the moment. the our station there from the studios in Galilee is using internet. We have a mobile app. We're on various internet platforms. We do Facebook Live, and we still get a lot of responses. But at the moment, we're online only until the end of the hostilities, when hopefully the government returns the transmitter to us, which they said they will. We own the transmitter, but it's in a facility that's managed by a company called Bezeq that operates about 90% of the transmitter sites in Israel on behalf of the government. And so they have physical possession of the unit and look after its security and care and feeding. They do the maintenance, provide the electricity and internet connectivity and all of that. So once they're done with their need for use of it for army radio purposes, then it'll be returned to Voice of Hope, and we'll get our programs back on 1287 AM.
You had a slide of Hezbollah rocket overhead. Was that from your studio location or the transmitter location?
Studio location. Yeah. About a month ago, there was a barrage of rockets fired by Hezbollah that were targeting areas in the southern Galilee. And a number of them landed just a mile or two inland from Tiberias on the southwestern shore of the lake. And, yeah, that was a bit scary. Our people there are used to it to a certain extent, but it's still a dangerous situation. So see these contrails in the sky where the Hezbollah rockets are coming and then the Iron Dome rockets are intercepting them, and you've got to be careful that shrapnel doesn't fall anywhere close to where you are. Yeah, it's very dodgy.
Now, your station is not allowed to broadcast locally in Hebrew, right?
Yeah, the terms of the license that we got in 2016 specifically said that we could not broadcast in Hebrew and we could not intentionally target an Israeli audience. So we broadcast primarily in Arabic. We do have some hours each week in English, and we're actually looking to expand the English programs as well. But obviously, a 50,000-watt AM transmitter is going to be heard throughout all, at least northern Israel. Has excellent coverage of Lebanon, southwestern Syria, covering the Damascus area. It goes through northern Jordan down to Amman. And the northern part of Israel covers the northern West Bank area, but also Israel proper above that has quite a few Arabs living in it. Nazareth is a town not too far from our studios, and that's an Arab majority town in Israel proper. And several of our presenters live there and drive in down to the lake. Sea of Galilee, of course, is a lake, and it's down in a huge depression. It's about 2,000 feet below sea level. It's quite amazing. But wow. Yeah, you go down this huge hillside road, go down to the lake level.
You've been there a few times, right?
Oh, yeah. But it's a beautiful location.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about the NASB meeting. It was July 22nd and 23rd. We began with a talk by someone who wasn't here because he got COVID and wasn't able to present. But Fred Waterer is the editor of the Shortwave Listener column in Spectro Monitor magazine. And he sent us his remarks, which we read to the audience here. About trends in shortwave programming, and he had some interesting perspectives, didn't he?
He certainly did. I was very impressed with his written comments. Maybe, perhaps in a different program, you could read his comments out for the Wavescale listeners.
I think we will, yeah.
I think they would find it very interesting, yeah.
Yeah, but he's been a shortwave listener for, I don't know, 40, 50 years, something like that, right?
I don't remember.
And maybe 40 years. And has been able to see, you know, the what's happened in shortwave during all that time, and we'll do that on a separate program in more detail. We also had another local, and Fred lives very near here, near Niagara Falls, and then we had another local person, Steve Canny, who was at the last meeting that Galcom hosted here 14 years ago. Fred was also. And Steve has been the QSL manager for a large AM station in Toronto, which has a shortwave transmitter. It's the last remaining shortwave transmission from Canada, right?
That's right. CFRB is the AM on 1010, and CFRX is its shortwave relay on 6070. And he's been the QSL manager for both of those stations now, I think on a volunteer basis, for something like 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
Done a fantastic job. And, yeah, he enjoys doing that. He corresponds with people that send in emails. He said most of the response they get these days from the DX community is for the shortwave, not for the AM. He said he doesn't get very many QSL requests for CFRB anymore, just for the shortwave. I asked him how CFRB on 1010 here did compared with WINS on the same frequency in New York City. And he said usually people are able to null by turning their radio one way or the other. And oftentimes, particularly at night, you can get both on the same frequency, just depending on what orientation you have the radio or your external antenna in.
They're both 50 kilowatts, aren't they?
Both 50,000 watts, presumably trying to protect each other as well. I don't know exactly what the requirements are. Yes, it's good that that one transmitter, CFRX, is still on the air here, even though the other shortwaves in Canada closed. I don't think the new owners really have much interest in it. Obviously, it's not producing income for them. There's no advertising market for the shortwave coverage. It's just really a curiosity. But they're happy to let it continue for the time being.
It shouldn't cost too much because they've got a small transmitter that is 900 watts, I believe.
Yeah, I think it's a kilowatt, but they said they operated at 900 watts. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, if you can hear it, then you're doing very well. I think it gets pretty decent penetration into northeastern US and Canada, mm-hmm. maritimes and so forth. It's a single stick omnidirectional antenna, ostensibly originally for coverage of northern Ontario, but that was when they had two masts, but then one of them fell down and they opted not to replace it. Mm-hmm. And now it's just a single mast, and that's what they use.
Yeah, so try and pick it up on, I think it's 6070, right?
6070, exactly, yeah.
Okay. Ray Robinson and I were talking there at Galcom headquarters in Canada during the 2024 annual meeting of the National Association of Shortwave Broadcasters.
Dear listeners and radio hobbyists, welcome you in August 2024 edition of Bangladesh DX Report in WaveScan. This is Salahuddin Dollar from Rajshahi, Bangladesh. Glad to be back and thanks for listening. Now the receiving log of different radio stations. August 5th, 2024. Radio Prague in Russian chatting between OM and YL was heard at 1510 UTC on 13650 kHz. The SIO code was 232. 7th August 2024. World Christian Broadcasting. Mahaganja Chinese program music was heard at 0453 UTC on 17530 kHz. The SIO code was 343. Radio Thailand Udonthai. English service national news by OM was heard at 0501 UTC on 17640 kHz. The SIO code was 444. NSK World Radio Japan news by OM in Russian was heard at 0531 UTC on 17530 kHz. The SIO code was 343. Sound of Hope Jing Wang Ji Sang OM talking in Chinese was heard at 1447 UTC on 21490 kHz. The SIO code was 433. 10th August 2024. Radio Argo, Irin Radio, Aldhabba, Somali Talk by OM and YL was heard at 1250 UTC on 21595 kHz. The SIO code was 333. Radio Free Asia, Dushanbe, Tibetan program. Closing announcement was heard at 1255 UTC on 17690 kHz. The SIO code was 333. Adventist World Radio, Vietnamese program, Christian Religious Preaching by OM was heard at 1301 UTC on 17605 kHz. The SIO code was 444. Trans World Radio Asia, Talata Bholondrai, Christian Religious Talk by OM in Bandeli was heard at 1305 UTC on 17700 kHz. The SIO code was 454. Radio Free North Korea, OM and OIL, Talking in Korean was heard at 1317 UTC on 11510 kHz. The SIO code was 433. Voice of Korea, Kujang, English Service Political Talk by OM was heard at 1325 UTC on 11710 kHz. The SIO code was 333. BBC Al Sila, English Service Sports Report by OM was heard at 1330 UTC on 11870 kHz. The SIO code was 444. We want to thank Mr. Pradeep Chandra Kundu of Tripura, India for his log sharing with us. If you have any comments and suggestion, and send your reception report to the following email address, dxbangla@gmail.com. The address again, dxbangla@gmail.com. Okay, I will come with more DX news in the next edition. Till then, take care. Salauddin Dollar, Rajshahi, Bangladesh.
We had Wavescan today with Czech folk music from Moravia. Thanks for listening to Wavescan, the international DX program from Adventist World Radio. Researched and written in Indianapolis by Adrian Peterson and in Los Angeles by Ray Robinson. Next week on the program, Island Hopping in the Pacific, Part 1, Tarawa and Canton. And more from the 2024 NASB National Meeting in Ontario, Canada. Wavescan is heard weekly on KSDA in Guam, AWR relays in various locations, WRMI in Florida, WWCR in Tennessee, Voice of Hope Africa in Zambia, and IRRS Italy. Send reception reports directly to the station you're listening to. Reports for KSDA and other AWR sites should go to qsl@awr.org. Other correspondence, not reception reports, can be sent to wavescan@yahoo.com. I'm Jeff White at WRMI Shortwave in Okeechobee, Florida. Till next week, good listening, everyone.